Good evening, everyone. Thanks for your patience. We're going to get started tonight. I ask that we all rise for the pledge of the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Mr. Miller, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Ms. Ramsey Smith.
Present.
Ms. Queeteck.
Present.
Ms. Laird.
Present.
Ms. Leon.
Present.
Ms. Wilhelm.
Present.
And Mr. Cologne.
Present, thank you. Tonight we have one citation honoring retired City of Bethlehem firefighter Kirk Decker. I don't believe Mr. Decker is here, so council will see to it that he receives it via mail. Moving on to the approval of minutes for the August 20, 2024 council meeting. Any discussion regarding the council minutes from our last meeting? Minutes stand approved. Moving on to public comment, as is custom, we'll start with subjects not being voted on this evening. We do have 8 people signed up in advance. I ask that we all adhere to the 5-minute time limit, and just a reminder, as anyone chooses to address council, you may be deferred to members of the administration who are here, the different department heads who might have more hands-on work to do with whatever issues are brought forward today, or I may invite anyone to stay after the meeting or follow up with council should you wish to, depending on what the comments are tonight. So I'll start with Ms. Mary Jo McCool. And if everyone doesn't mind stating their name for the record, please.
Mary Jo McCool, 449 Grandview Boulevard. I'm here tonight to ask council to consider enacting an ordinance requiring utility companies to complete work once started within a reasonable time limit. My request for such ordinance stems from UGI replacing gas mains, laterals, and meters on Grandview Boulevard and Glendale Avenue. My neighbors and I and myself were notified over 8 weeks ago that this work was going to be done. The city posted no parking signs, which I assumed the work would begin shortly. It was delayed to a glitch in paperwork with the city. When it did begin, the crew worked steady, replacing mains along Grandview Boulevard in Glendale. The crew stopped work after about 2 weeks as they were called to another job site. No work was done for a week. They returned to install laterals along Glendale Avenue. This work was completed on August 22, 2024. On the 23rd of August, the contractor returned to what I thought was to begin work on the laterals along Grandview Boulevard. I was sadly mistaken. They loaded up the equipment to proceed to another job. This job, I was told, was to remove a steel plate that was on a state road and by law could not remain in place over a holiday weekend. My home is located on the northern end of Grandview Boulevard, where the street is more level than the upper end of Grandview Boulevard. They used this location as the staging area for 2 piles of stone and cold patch, 2 of which are directly in front of my home. Today they began adding to these piles. They also dropped off a load of large stone to these piles. Also, 2 of which were, today they began adding to these piles. Also, when they drop the load of large stone, the pile is so wide it blocks one driving lane due to the angle parking on the east side of Grandview Boulevard, making it difficult for traffic to turn onto or from Glendale Avenue. Mind you, they began this project stone was placed too close to the curb, and during rainstorms the stone was washed up into my grass between the curb and the sidewalk. At my insistence, they had to stop to remove it from my lawn. It was too heavy for me to move, so I was able to mow my lawn without the possibility of injuring myself or damaging my mower caused by flying stone. Due to the equipment parked too close to the curb and corner and one storm drain, heavy rain once again fell and washed up onto my sidewalk and rained down the middle of my sidewalk. Some homeowners' meters are located inside their homes, others are not. The contractor will need access to homeowners' basements to reconnect new laterals and to remove meters and install them outside. This puts unnecessary burdens on homeowners' schedules and everyday activities. Homeowners without natural gas are also inconvenienced due to parking restrictions. This is why an ordinance of this nature, I feel, is necessary. I am fortunate to have a garage, but if I have several errands to do, parking in front of my home is more advantageous and less strained. With the new school year underway, the contractor will now not only have to deal with normal traffic, but school bus traffic as well. The corner of Grandview Boulevard and Glendale is a school bus stop. I respectfully ask you to take this situation under advisement. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker this evening, Jordan Bold.
Good evening. My name is Jordan Bold. First and foremost, I would like to thank our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for giving us the freedom to be able to convene together regardless of our personal opinions for the betterment of our community. Secondly, and to the point, I would like to address an issue that has caught my attention in the very short time that I've been attending these council meetings. With all due respect to the council members, we do need to tighten the ship up here in the city. The infighting has gotten too bad between all of you. It does no good for all of us. I'd like to go over a letter, though, from John Adams to his wife from a visit to Bethlehem, just to remind us of what we used to be. Tell me if this sounds like anything that we are today. He writes that... He promised her a more particular account of a curious and remarkable town called Bethlehem. And, when he first came into the site of the town, we found a county better cultivated and more agreeably diversified with prospects of orchards and fields, groves and meadows, hills and valleys than we had ever seen. They have carried the mechanical arts to greater perfection here than in any place we have seen. We used to be that. There are three public institutions here of very remarkable nature. There still are, but, you know, and then he says that they showed us their church, which is hung round with pictures of our Savior from his birth to his death, resurrection, and ascension. End quote. To which I have to respond, what happened here? How far have we come from the natural beauty of our landscape? Because we gave way to corporations, warehouses, and affordable housing. It's obviously aimed to uproot the citizens that have been here in the city before it became a third-rate city instead of a third-class city with their obviously less than affordable rent prices. Which brings us to the next portion of his letter, which states, Christian love is the professed object, but it is said that they love money more and make their public institutions subservient to the gratification of that passion. That apparently has not changed. What I do propose, though, is a start to the solution. I'm nobody in the eyes of the public, especially you guys, but in the eyes of the Lord, I'm plenty. That's all that counts to me. So the start cannot come from within a system so far devolved into the basic concept of greed. It must come from without and swallow it whole. I propose that the people of this city take hold of what is ours and tell our government what we need. But what I need you as a community to do is to come to them with your problems, but come to them with a solution also. Because nobody wants to help someone who doesn't even want to help themselves. The world has come to rely on people around them for everything instead of taking accountability for their own behavior and their own actions and helping themselves first. So before you project your failures and insecurities onto the world, let yourself burn in the fire of your own contempt. When we see something that needs to be done, if you can do something about it, do it. If you see somebody possibly in need, ask to help. If they decline, move on. but at least you tried and might inspire them to pass it on. Change starts with the people. You must take back that control. I will leave you with this. Say less, do more. Thank you.
Thank you. Next person signed up, Helen Rock. We're not going anywhere.
Hi, I'm Helen Rook, and I'm really nervous, but I'm here today to talk to you about the city ordinance and the trash haulers. I have an issue with on Union Boulevard, 40 East Union Boulevard. I live at 38 East Union Boulevard. Is Malozzi Tile and Marble. He has a trash hauler, Republic, and CSI is the other one. There's two of them that come there at 5:30. It's 5:30 now, but it was started out at 5:45 in the morning on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Every morning, 5:45, you can hear him over there with the dumpster in the air, shaking the dumpster. Now, I live right next door, shaking the dumpster up in the air, bouncing it to make things fall out of it, and my brand new windows I just got put in vibrate. My dogs bark, run around like crazy. The cats run. It's ridiculous. I call and complain and talk to them. I've called the city of Bethlehem. I've talked to a few people, Bill Santiago and Tad Miller, spoke to you. I've spoken to neighbors, and I've spoken to everybody, and I don't know who else to talk to. I get the finger from them. I get the, you know, when I go out to talk to them at 5:30 in the morning. Now, every time I complain, it gets earlier. Now, it started at 5:45. Now, we're at 5:30 now. And 5:28 in the morning, on Tuesday morning, they were there. I go out there in my nightgown. When my husband's at work, he works night shift. I go out there in my nightgown to talk to these guys, and I get the finger. I get laughed at. They do the Barbie wave to me. I have no idea what to do. But the city ordinance does say that they can't be on the residential, collecting residential trash till 6 a.m. 6 a.m. it says. I think that should be 7. Because of where I live, but I mean, I'm not going to argue with it. I'll be happy with the 6 a.m. because I can prepare for that. I have a dog that has PTSD, so I can prepare for it. I can get up early. I can make sure that dog is sleeping. I can make sure that dog's comforted when that thing goes, you know, bounce, 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 and shakes our house. But I can't if I have no idea what time that thing, that truck's going to show up. You know, if I know that truck's not going to show up before 6 a.m., I can deal with it. But I can't deal with it at 5:30 on a Tuesday, and on a Thursday it's 5:45 or whatever. I can't prepare for that. I just want them to do what's right. I've tried talking to them. I don't know who else to talk to. So now I'm here talking to you. I just need help. And I don't know where else to go. So if you point me in the right direction, I'll do what he said. I'll do whatever I have to, because I don't know what else to do. I've tried talking to everybody. Talking don't work. I don't know if I should, you know, start suing them. I don't know. And I don't want to do that because I don't want to be just like everybody else, run to the lawyers and stuff. I think you should sit down and talk about your problem, work it out, figure it out. But I don't know. I'm out of figuring it out. I need some help figuring it out. So, here I am. Thank you.
You're welcome. So thank you for coming out tonight. Sorry, Chief Police Chief Cott is here. If you wanted to briefly touch base with her in the hallway, okay. I'm sure Chief Cott, she appears very eager to speak with you if you want to step out and speak with her.
Okay, thank you.
Our next speaker is Valerie Noonan.
Hello. So I hope you all had a great Labor Day weekend.
I was having a pretty good one, and then I found out something pretty upsetting. So, if you recall, I believe two meetings ago last month, the meeting during Music Fest, it was pouring rain, it was really early, you had to navigate the parking, no one was there except for like me and two people. Yeah, so I came there because I wanted to share some of my conversations with people down in the homeless encampment under Fahey Bridge. I felt it was important. And at the time, I was concerned about their restroom and their hygiene situation. I didn't realize there were other things I should have been concerned about. So this weekend, Mounted Police came to the encampment and told residents they would be kicked out in the next 2 weeks. And the alleged reason for this is that they're trying to install telephone poles on the side of the river opposite the encampment by the DNL trail. And I have to wonder, was this plan already in place last month? And if so, that's kind of deceptive, the kind of conversations that were being had about improving their conditions, if that was already planned. But regardless of that, it's cruel. It's very cruel. The very act of sweeping a homeless encampment, a tent encampment, is cruel down to its bones. And I come and I sit through every city council meeting, and you guys love to talk about affordable housing. You love to talk about housing. It's like some meetings, it's the only thing you talk about. And it's incredibly cruel and hypocritical for the city to be doing this if you care about housing people. And I just want to know, whose decision was this? Who authorized this? When was this decision made? It's really frustrating to me. I've been stewing about this all weekend. Because sweeping a homeless encampment like that, if they had a better place to go, they would be there. No one wants to be living under a bridge. I'm really frustrated today. And talking to people, excuse me, talking to people at the encampment, I know there are people who have tried to come up here and advocate for themselves before, and they said they were made to feel unwelcome, which is unfortunate because while there have been kind of clashes between, you know, myself and city council and some of the people I know and love in city council before, I feel overall that this is a relatively welcoming environment, and it breaks my heart to hear that not only are these people suffering these issues, but that some of them feel like they're not really welcome here to talk about it. So I can't really speak to what the exact incident was, but from my understanding, it came from a poor experience they had before. But really, like, what I want to keep the focus on here is that being given 2 weeks' notice to uproot everything you have and go somewhere else when you're already living in the last place anyone would pick to live, it's horrible. And sweeping encampments like this, people can lose their possessions, the only things that they have. They lose their only place to sleep, their only peace. I am frustrated by this, and I would really like some answers. And I would like to ask that we put a stop to this, and that the encampment be allowed to stay where it is. Thank you.
Thank you. And when we get to new business, there may be questions for members of council when we get to our council agenda. Our next speaker, Artie Curatola.
Hi, I'm Artie Curatola, 813 Lawford Street, Bethlehem, Southside. I was talking to my attorney friend who I hang out in Vegas with, and he pointed out some things to me. It's ironic that a number of years ago, when I ran for the mayor of the city, Arts Quest, as I was doing a comedy show, the place was packed. Nobody left. Nobody stood up and said anything. But the guy that ran the comedy show from Arts Quest said I was racist because I said some jokes about the Mexican people. However, I performed Mexican restaurants for about the past 5 years all over the tri-state area. They thought the jokes were funny over there too, in the Mexican. But anyway, I was labeled as a racist by Arts Quest and forever banned. It's been over seven years from Arts Quest. And then, when I was going to run for mayor again, somebody from city council pointed out to the press that I said something anti-Semitic. And even the mayor was behind this. And this went right into the paper of me being anti-Semitic because I stated that this city was named after the city that Jesus Christ was born into, Bethlehem. So therefore we should be an example in everything that we do. It was written up in the press that I said we should practice the teachings of Jesus Christ if we live in the city of Bethlehem. Now that's what they wrote as my main thing of being considered anti-Semitic. Now, for, I don't know how you practice teachings, for one thing, but the thing is, I said we should honor the teaching of Jesus Christ of we should be an example. There is a difference there. Now, the things that I stated that were considered anti-Semitic all are backed up by the Bible or by history books. I stated the Jewish people are very intelligent people. They started the Bible, actually, and they are the chosen people. God actually let them kill people, but I didn't say that. But I would never said the Jewish people were like the Nazis. There was never an anti-Semitic statement made. And I'm not one to make something about myself, but my attorney friend said, that was all a ploy so you would not get your votes from the police who were behind you, the firemen, the teachers, and since I was for the lower middle class people to help get things done right and try to get things done right in the city, they squashed my whole thing by letting this go with backing it up saying I was anti-Semitic. Any statements that were made that you might consider anti-Semitic, if you look at them, you will see they were backed up by the history books. Backed up as far as the Bible, where I also said, I guess, all the Jewish women that are running for office, if you're putting yourself above your man, don't forget, Eve was from the fourth rib of Adam. That meant that the woman's supposed to stand by her man, support her man. That says all throughout the Bible. But then again, they don't go by that. They didn't go, but they do go by the Jewish people can kill and get away with it because they're the God's chosen people. Now, if that's considered anti-Semitic, so be it. But I never stated that before, but I'm saying that now. Anti-Semitic, that killed my walk for going ahead and running for the mayor of this city to be able to help people. So now you have what you wanted. You wanted your mayor to be elected again, he will be. I'm not going to be standing in the way. Anti-Semitic. I want to know what I said that was anti-Semitic. I pointed this out before. Nobody came forward. I like to get a retractment in the press on this thing, if what I'm saying is right. I said the Jewish people are very smart. They made a whole couple books on anti-Semitism. Us Italians, and we didn't do that. Puerto Ricans didn't do that. Blacks didn't do that. But the Jewish people are very smart. Actually, I did state they actually organized crime. They got the Italians to go ahead and go with them. Is that considered anti-Semitic? That's history. Arnold Rothstein, Meyer Lansky, Bugsy Siegel, Gus Greenbaum, all Jewish people. They organized crime. So, am I anti-Semitic for saying that? Yes. Pointed out, or I want a retractment. I want you to push it like you pushed the anti-Semitic thing in with the press. You go ahead and look at that. God bless you.
Our next speaker is Harry Faber.
Let me just say, what a tough act to follow. Mayor Reynolds, glad to see you. It's been a minute. So I've been reading Lobbying for Zionism by Lon Pape, or on both sides of the Atlantic. And in the first chapter, he talks about this idea that I've never heard of called the city on the hill. And that's, I wrote a little bit about it. And the phrase can be traced back to the New Testament. Now, full disclosure, I'm not a religious person. But in the Sermon on the Mount, as recorded in the book of Matthew, Jesus tells his followers, "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, so they may see your good." Now, I'm not a religious person anymore, but I grew up Moravian. The Moravians, as you guys know, are those who built this city. We are the city on the hill. When they came over from Europe, you know, this was their way of creating, you know, their paradise on earth. And that's what they wanted to do. And it's kind of funny that a couple other people also talked about, you know, the city of Bethlehem and its name and its meaning. And I gotta say, you know, it's not awful. You know, the city has so many great things, and that's why I love the city of Bethlehem so dearly. You know, besides just the fact that I grew up here my whole life. You know, the Moravians tried to be revolutionary, you know, and they tried to be different from the injustice around them. And I'm not saying that you guys aren't, but it's crazy that, you know, we're going on a year now of the genocide in Gaza, and that's where we're named after from Palestine. And it's still just so disheartening that, and I understand, if you guys were to say, you know what, if we denounced the genocide, we would lose funding. If you just said it straight up, that would make sense. I can understand that. And that would then, in turn, affect the material conditions of those of the city, those I care so much about. But we're not getting that. We're not getting anything. It's often, like, you know, swept under the rug. And I find that very disheartening, because we are the city on the hill. Bethlehem City has so many great attributes, and we are so different from a lot of other cities, just in the Lehigh Valley, like Allentown. You guys do not just beat up the protesters and arrest them. You guys are very compassionate and nuanced. And I bet when I first started coming, I didn't view you guys like that. I didn't see the nuances. You guys know how I used to be and how I can still be. But I try to see the nuances every day, and I hope you guys do too. And when I heard what Valerie said about what's going on under Fahey Bridge, I walk the DNL trail all the time. I've been doing that since I started going to Moravian University. And I can definitely say they've never been a problem for those around. And I'm not saying that, like, you know, there could be problems going on. I've never personally visited the homeless encampment. But when you look at issues like homelessness, right, it's kind of almost like a weed, right? If you just cut the top off, okay, it's just going to grow back. You didn't attack the roots, right? When you look at these issues that are systemic, okay, you can force them out from under the bridge. Where are they going to go? You want them in the street, camped out front, Hotel B? Is that what you want? No. No. What we really should be striving for is, again, affordable housing. Housing those that are in need. I mean, it's kind of simple. And, you know, the mayor and you guys also talk about these systemic issues, but yet, here we are still doing the same old surface-level baloney. And that's what it is, you know? Like, doing that isn't going to solve the homeless crisis. Solving the homeless crisis starts by giving jobs a pay a living wage, and by creating housing that is affordable, by putting, and I know we as like a third class city or whatever can't, you know, set limits on that, and I understand that. Like, there are these restrictions that the federal and state level government has imposed upon us. But they're also not being communicated effectively, and some of the decision making is definitely can be described as inadequate, you know. So as far as it goes on what we do here and how we stand for our brothers and sisters and humankind in Palestine, or the people that are living under Fahey Bridge because they have nowhere else to live, I ask for compassion to see the nuance. Like, I used to not see in you guys. I know I used to be kind of nasty, and I apologize, but I ask for your forgiveness on behalf of those people, because they don't deserve the living conditions. And even if they did wrong, or they committed crimes and that's why they're homeless now, people can change, but they're not going to change or be able to change if they're not given an opportunity to do so, in which, you know, they're being cared for or treated properly. So thank you, and nice to see you, Mayor.
Thanks for the nuance, Mr. Paper. Our next speaker, Olivia Ransom.
Hi, my name is Olympia Ransom. I live on 507 First Ave, Bethlehem, 18015. I have a lot of different topics of things that I wanted to talk about. Number one, the most recent, would be during Music Fest. I did see, even though I have heard that that is not happening, I did see that a lot of people did push back because of the fireworks on the DNL Trail. And the DNL Trail is right around that area where they were having fireworks right over top of Fahy Bridge. The entire bridge was blocked out, but I was honestly hearing ringing in my ear for multiple hours after the fireworks, and I was just standing on the bridge, so I can't imagine being under the bridge around that area. I'm sure it was really hard to deal with that. On top of that, during Music Fest, I also saw people spraying things around the Music Fest venue. They did take out the trees and the boulder that was right by on the corner of the intersection where the wooden match is, and I mean, so that does cause soil erosion, but that's not really the point. They were spraying loads of I believe it was pesticides. On the news, they did cover it that it was a mosquito repellent. Regardless if it was Roundup or mosquito repellent, they can't be sprayed at certain temperatures, and at that day, I believe it was over 90 degrees that day that I saw them spraying, but I saw them spraying various times in various days. So I did contact the Environmental Advisory Council, and they were going to push that got looked into and made sure that they weren't using Roundup at all, and just make sure that everyone that does work for Arts Quest and Music Fest make sure that they know exactly the right temperatures that they can spray those if even needed to be sprayed. A lot of the trees and shrubs and whatnot were taken around all around the city, not just at that one venue outside of Wooden Match, so I do want that to be looked into. Also, I forget the woman's name, but I believe it was last meeting on August 6th, I do urge the same call to get a count of the student housing that's outside of the zoning ordinance, because it's under my impression that the ones that were there outside of the zoning ordinance were grandfathered in if they were there before the zoning ordinance, so I would like a count on that. Also, there are two buildings that say they're for student housing under Surface Development, I believe, and that's on Southside. And they're being built, but it looks like it's going to be a large development, and I'm not sure why we need more student housing because there's already loads of it. I live on off-campus housing as well. I'm transitioning from 507 First Ave to 524 Thomas Street on the south side, and almost half of the properties that are Amicus around my area are all, no one's living in them, so they're completely open, and they could be renting them out for lower income because the range of rent with those properties is anywhere from $400 to over $1,000, but $400, $500 a month is considered low affordable housing for some people, so they could be marketed, if students aren't living in them, they could be marketed to low-income families, and we could push for that as well. Also, on top of that, I also want to push that we get more trash cans down on the DNL Trail. I know there's the one outside of the one passageway, but I've been down there myself. I've helped pick up trash. I've brought loads and loads of garbage bags. They don't have the garbage bags to put into the trash container first of all, and then second of all, that one trash container, every single time I pass by, it's completely overflowing. Usually the trash isn't picked up every single week. Also need people to come through and make sure that there's no biohazards or anything. If the trash is being dumped into the Lehigh River, I would push for a research development on how the trash is affecting the river and the wildlife that's within the river. I also push that we look into the Norfolk Southern train derailment, because I'm not sure if actual further research and proper research was done for the chemicals that were unloaded during that trail derailment, but I also would like that being looked into as well. And let me think, I think that was everything. Okay, I think that's everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Nice job going by memory, buddy.
Yeah.
Our next speaker and the last person who had signed up, Dylan, I believe, Arich McFarland. Apologies if I'm misreading him.
Well, down this time to speak. Shout out Art. Funny. I can give you a pass on behalf of all Jewish people for that being the funniest speech I've ever heard. I totally would. But on a more serious note, I'm a student who's studying to be an engineer, specifically in the realm of public development. And when I was told about the situation that could potentially be going on with Fahey Bridge, I came running. Because my profession, in specific, is constantly sort of weaponized in order to harm people who are less privileged than others. Specifically, if I could recommend some reading to the audience, Jim Ferguson, the author of The Anti-Politic Machine, discusses how public work projects are often used for larger development organizations such as municipalities in order to make political problems technical problems where they might not be otherwise. And that's dangerous. It's dangerous not only for people being affected, but also for those enacting the projects. It ruins public trust. So if I could make an ask to the city of Bethlehem regarding Fahey Bridge and the situation with the encampment under there, is to really reel in on the core values of what the city should be, is to understand that a municipal government is only as good as the public consent it receives, right? Roger Mahoney, I think he was a cardinal in the Los Angeles diocese or something, described that a society is only as strong as it treats its least privileged members, as it treats its last, its littlest, and its least. And sort of with the themes on all the things we've been discussed thus far, I believe that the city of Bethlehem has an obligation to use this moral framework of judging itself based off of how it treats its last, its littlest, and its least in how it acts. So please, moving forward with the Fahey Bridge situation, I urge extreme caution with regards to the potential guise of a public work project being used as justification to clear out the encampment, because it's dangerous to everyone involved. So that is my time.
Thank you, Dylan. That exhausts our list of everyone who had signed up in advance. I will go around the room from my left to my right. Is there anyone to the left who has not spoken? I'll start.
Well, I forgot something. No.
Looks like we're already moving on, but I am going to start here in the center. Yes, if you don't mind, come to the microphone, please.
Hi, I'm a Lehigh Valley resident who came to this meeting because I heard about the plan to clear the homeless encampment under Fahey Bridge. I think it's just really a travesty that there are the solution that the governments of this country seem to have chosen to deal with homelessness is not housing, but police and things of that nature. I'm the son of a social worker who worked for affordable housing projects and homeless shelters in New York City for most of my childhood. He's a part of a group of people who believe in housing first solutions to homelessness. I imagine that most people who work with homeless people are advocates of this. I think I understand this is just a city council and there's limits to your power, but I do think prioritizing building housing that people can live in and shelters that people can use is more important than prioritizing sweeping the places that they're already living because they have no other place to live. And I think it's just important that we treat all our neighbors, even those without addresses, with the respect and dignity they deserve. I yield the rest of my time. Thank you.
Do you mind stating your name for the record?
Oh, yeah. Milo Otsit. Sorry about that.
No need to apologize. Thank you. Anyone else still left? Mr. Rodriguez?
Mm-hmm. Rodriguez, Holy Family of Women's Bethlehem. I'm here to talk about council's attacks on each other and how you spoke. I didn't want to do this, but I'm getting a little sick and tired of seeing debates amongst yourselves with certain individuals that are instigating the attacks or dislikes or being disagreeable or debating with each other, which is not good for the other ones that are trying to stay out of it. But it's like a wolf pack, you know, going out attacking each other. And it's also affecting our mayor. First of all, there seems to be a dislike among yourselves. Your president does not stop anger among each others, not using the gavel as he should. Favoritism has been shown by exceeding the 5-minute time limit. I'm not going to name the individual that I had in mind. Someone well known with a strong community title. There's been other council members that seem to be debating with the mayor, constantly disagreeing with shows, with speaking over each other, or this individual, for instance, interrupting either the president of council or council members. This is not good. The president of council should step in and take care of these issues immediately. Voting should not be expressed by any council member prior to actual voting. This process clearly encourages a council member on how to vote. Council members should keep their personal vote secret until the actual vote. Sometimes members of the audience interact with a council member. Anyone at the podium should not have interaction with anyone in the audience at any time. Even turning around to speak to, I've seen this. And the president of council wanting to do something about it, yet hesitant to do something about it. Doesn't use the gavel. And I'm not blaming you, sir. Sometimes it gets, I understand. Sometimes it gets to the point, you know, where it gets hectic, you know, and there's loudness and there's disagreements and it gets out of hand. And this is not good. The image of city council should be kept at a certain point where you have to respect each other. The gentleman that was speaking before, he was right. But I go a little bit deeper. Stop the debates. Stop the disagreements among each other. I would strongly urge, it's only a suggestion, to change the position of your council members. That way they don't interact with each other. Like, for instance, influence a vote by speaking with each other so that it affects the vote, like whispering this or that. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It's influencing each other to act and vote and to be disagreeing with a certain individual, also teaching yourselves to act in a certain way. That is not right. I used to be that way a long, long time ago. And that's why I know when I see these things happening, because I've spoken about my history, but I'm not going to go into that. But when I see this amongst yourselves, this is not good at all. And this is where I leave it. So please think about these things. Act a little differently. Stop debating with the mayor. The mayor got a lot of things on his hand. You know, I never liked that guy. But I learned to respect him. I learned to respect him because he's doing a great job for the city. So all power to you. Keep on doing the right thing because I know that you're out to do the right thing for the city. I thank you for your actions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rodriguez.
I always like you. Rodriguez, don't make me gavel you as you walk back to the seat.
Come on. Is there anyone else that left who would speak who has not had a chance to speak yet? I turn to the wide center. Is there anyone? I'll start.
Hello. Hi, Bucks.
Hello.
I'm a member of the homeless community in the town. I used to live down in the township for 10 years before I came here. I have a good relationship with the police, the fire department, and a lot of the organizations around here. And if you need a resource, I'm available for interaction. I know most of the people I've been here a couple of years on the Bay Bridge. Hi, Jim. I know a lot of people around town, so I don't want to talk politics or religion or voting or any of that, but my experience while I've been here has not been bad, and I believe that the individual is responsible for the individual, and I've received a lot of support while I've been in this town, and I appreciate it.
Thank you. Again, do you mind stating your name for the record, sir?
Oh, you're asking a lot. I sound like the police thing. Pull me over. Drew Gottimer, G-O-T-I-M-E-R. I used to live down on Wilson Avenue in the township for about 10 years.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to go from left to right in the center. Is there anyone in the wide center who wants to make a comment? Mr. Shire? And then I'll continue going from my left to my right.
Well, I resolutely will not compliment anyone tonight. Bill Shire, 1898 Avenue. It's no secret we have immigrants in Bethlehem, and very likely some of them are illegal. And so this relates to an issue that has arisen again in the campaign for President of the United States. One of the candidates is repeating the allegation that illegally immigrants are coming across the border and murdering American citizens. So it was very interesting to come across some research by the Cato Institute. Now you might ask, what on earth is the Cato Institute? And I'll give you a little context for that, having lived in D.C. temporarily. I learned about the various think tanks. We'll start with the Brookings Institution, which is a little left of center. Then there's the American Enterprise Institute, which is a little right of center. And sometimes those two do cooperate on projects. Then to the right of the American Enterprise Institute is the Heritage Foundation. And they are the originators of the Project 2025, which you may have heard about. And then to the right of them is the Cato Institute. Now, Cato was an ancient Roman senator, alive when it was still a republic. And they are libertarians. They believe in smaller government, the better. So it's doubly interesting that they've come out with this research, and I will read the title of the article. New Cato research shows that illegal immigrants are less likely to be convicted of murder in Texas. The reason for Texas is that it's got an unusual law, not the only unusual law in Texas, but this one requires the police to ascertain the immigration status of anybody who is arrested for anything. This researcher at the Cato Institute is zeroing in on murders, and not just murder arrests, but murder convictions. And for obvious reasons, and he also states that he feels that something as serious as a murder conviction, they're going to try harder to be accurate. Bottom line, in the 10-year period from 2013 to 2022. By the way, this particular article the latest one in their research is, just came out in June. It's a 10-year period. The rate of, well, he knows the numbers, so many murders, convictions for native-born citizens, so many for legal immigrants, so many for illegal immigrants. And he has data then on the size of the population so he can compute the rates. Illegal immigrants are 37% less likely to be convicted of a murder than a native-born American in the state of Texas for this 10-year period. And there's probably a good one thing that occurs to me is that illegal immigrants want to keep their heads down, because if they get to the attention of the police, then they get deported for whatever reason. But that is the number, so hopefully that's okay. It's not widely, hasn't been reported in the media, not the mainstream media anyway. Just wanted to lay that out there. I think it's an important number. On another subject, very quickly, homeless housing. Heard it on NPR about a town of Newburyport, Massachusetts, 30 miles up the coast from Boston. This church, starting with donations, has been acquiring vacant properties, fixing them up, and then selling them to people, helping them with the down payment. And these people are paying a mortgage payment then, instead of rent. And once the mortgage is paid off, and then they use the money to start doing it again. I tried to Google this, but I was unsuccessful. And by the way, I have a copy here of this Cato thing, if anybody wants it. But that seems Thank like it's Mr. something Shire. Worth looking into. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, in the very front row.
Hello, my name is Quincy. I won't be providing my surname. I'm here tonight to also speak in support of not clearing out this homeless encampment under Fahey Bridge. I used to be homeless. I became homeless through a combination of disability and pure dumb bad luck. And I am not homeless anymore through pure dumb good luck. And I'm here to tell you that when you're homeless, it's the most difficult thing that I have ever experienced. It's so hard, sorry. It's terrifying all the time. I didn't ever live in an encampment, but I did live in a downtown of the city. I was always having to be on the move. I was completely unable to do anything with my day other than deal with the reality of being homeless. It's so hard to get out of there by yourself. You need the help of a huge community, and if you are kicking people out of where they live, then you are not helping your community. You are telling these people who are going through one of the most difficult things that people can go through, you're saying, hey, I hate you. I don't think that you should have a chance. Do not clear this encampment. Let homeless people live. Leave them alone.
Thank you.
Sorry.
In the very back.
Okay. My name is Naomi. No last name given. A few months ago, myself and a few other community members spotted a homeless encampment under Center Street and New Street, right down the hill from here, which was struggling with trash pickup and accessing bathroom facilities. We decided to organize some community cleanups to remove some of the trash and keep the area cleaner for the residents and for the river nearby. We've since discovered that many of the challenges the encampment is facing are about lack of resources, lack of access to trash cans for waste management, and wheelbarrows to carry trash to dumpsters, and lack of access to public bathrooms, which have been closed during summers and night times. Many of the homeless people who live in this encampment are committed to removing this trash as well, and assist us with our cleanups when we provide the resources to help. They are also desperate to remove this trash and maintain their own living space and are committed to preserving the area. They all have tough stories about how they ended up down there. They all used to be regular Bethlehem residents, just like you and your neighbors, before they wound up in tough times. They call Norfolk Southern regularly to make sure that they are allowed on this property, and they regularly communicate with the city to make sure they won't be kicked out. I am concerned that we've been hearing reports from the members of the encampment that they have received a 2 weeks notice from Officer Ryan, presumably from the Bethlehem Police Department. No last name was given, but the residents under the bridge were told that they would be kicked out due to the need for telephone poles all the way across the river. This is despite our repeated reassurances that the encampment would not be removed from City Council and police, and this comes as a direct spit in the face to activists who have worked hard to pass pro-homeless legislation in other areas of Lehigh Valley. I want to know, first off, who is responsible for this decision? Who has authorized this removal on behalf of the city? What corporation is asking that these residents be removed? And has Norfolk Southern authorized this removal? Second, where are you going to have them go? The city is facing a serious housing crisis. Do you have emergency shelters open for them? Have any of you supported permanent public or even affordable housing legislation that will pass soon enough to house these folks in 2 weeks? Are they going to be allowed to come back to their encampment, or will all of their belongings be destroyed? Will you even be providing them waste management resources and public bathroom access near the next encampment they are bound to set up? What is the point of this? If the issue is telephone poles, the only location this should apply to is across the river on the DNL trail. If the issue is trash, Sunrise Lehigh Valley is already organizing events to remove the trash, and you could provide trash containers, trash bags, and bathroom access for residents. I've invited a few of the encampment residents here to share their stories of how they ended up under this bridge. One of them has already shared his story, Drew, as well as other members of the homeless community to discuss how they have been treated by the police in the city. So you can understand that these people, and you and everyone in this room, are much more likely to end up living under the bridge than one of those corporate executives that are trying to kick them out. I know I speak for so many people when I say my partner and I are one check away from losing our housing, and that this housing crisis has taken up about half of our income. As you listen to them tell their stories, please keep in mind that many couldn't make it today due to language barriers and disabilities, and due to the fact that we only found out about this problem 2 days ago, and this was put together very suddenly, and that many of the people here today are sharing horrendous personal experiences that may be one story on a Tuesday night for you, but represent a lifetime worth of trauma for them. Trauma you could prevent from happening again. Thank you.
Thank you. And then, as I stated earlier, to anyone who wants to stick around for the actual meeting after public comment, maybe some dialogue about this when we get to new business. In the green hood.
Hello, City Hall. My name is Brendan Schwalm. I am part of the homeless community. I come here tonight to talk to you about what's going to happen with us. For starters, if you guys actually helped us, we wouldn't be in this situation. If you actually cared about us, you would help. You would give us housing, maybe affordable places to live, you know. It's pretty ridiculous how I have to go outside every day and get shamed for being homeless. It's not fair to me or my wife who's pregnant. Being out here and not being able to get the resources we deserve. We're just like you. We were born in God's image. It doesn't matter where you come from or where you've been. It's the matter of fact that we all are human beings. We deserve to have what you have, just like you have what we don't. It doesn't matter what we are or what we are. It's the fact that we need help, but you guys just don't do anything. And I understand, Mr. Mayor, you try everything you can, but you can do a little bit more to help us, especially with the housing community. Every time I look, I see a new place for college students. We have enough college student housing. We need the housing. I've been trying to get off the streets for 6 years, Mr. Mayor. Do you know what that's like? You probably don't. I've been homeless for 6 years. Half with my mother and half of my wife were just met recently. I have three kids to raise. I'm trying to get off the streets. I'm 22 years old, going on 23 this Friday. I'm trying my best to get a job, but no one will hire me because of my situation. And no one cares. The police just harass us. They don't care about us. What else can I say? Basically, what happens is we will be sitting at the library, and I understand it's your city hall. I understand that. But sometimes we have things to charge. I understand we're not really supposed to do it, but we have to because my wife has other kids that she needs to talk to. We just sit there, and we're not bothering anybody, and we mind our own business, and we get harassed. And I'm tired of it. I understand my attitude may come off as rude or harsh, but I just want to come here to have you guys understand what we go through every day. It's not easy getting a meal for us either. We have to eat one meal a day, and you guys barely have any services for us to eat at. New Bethany gets overcrowded, and where we go right now basically serves us only one meal a day. We would just want to be treated just like the rest of you guys. We're not here to harass you, or hurt you, or harm you, or steal from you. We just want to be people, just like you. We want the things you guys have. And if you guys can help us, there wouldn't be so much of us left. We could actually be people again. I used to live here when I was a kid, for over 10 years. I lived on 201 Mechanic Street here in Southside Bethel with my family. I was homeless. I became homeless because of a certain situation that happened to me. A very shitty situation, excuse my language, sorry. A very crappy situation that happened to me. I didn't ask for this. No one asked to be homeless. It just happens because of the circumstances that we get forced into. And I understand what you guys try to do, but you could just do a little more. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the Y Center who wanted to make a comment? Yes, sir. Okay.
Name is Willow. I will not give my surname. First of all, correlation does not mean causation. As for the housing in the Lehigh Valley, I wanted to talk about how housing in the Lehigh Valley has become available to those of us who don't live here. New developments present themselves like traps on asphalt, waiting to suffocate our communities. Where are people meant to go? If I were to lose my house tomorrow, should I consider myself homeless? Should I see myself through your front doors so you cannot avoid the issue? Would that be too kind? Should I just plant myself on your lawn with a tent and ask when the housing crisis happening and that will be addressed? Because I can promise you, I will. Your trespassing signs be damned. Your pretty petunias be damned. I will sit on your roses and disrupt the growth of your flowers until you notice that the city isn't blooming. It is dying. Empty buildings present themselves as solutions to the issue, because the city has yet to answer the calls of our neighbors and acknowledge housing is a right, not a privilege. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the Y Center who wants to make comment? Yes, in the very front.
Good evening. My name is Gray Simpson. That's G-R-A-Y for the record. I'm also here to advocate for my neighbors who live just a couple hundred feet south of here. I'm a resident of Bethlehem, have been for 6 years, and I consider everyone who lives here to be a neighbor. I think that's all I need to say. I'm looking forward to the dialogue tonight and hopefully some action. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the Y Center who wants to make comment? Anyone in the hall or?
Hello there. I'd like to put my name into the record as Steven. Declined to give a last name. I'm a resident of the city, and I've been a resident of the city for about 2 years now. I probably had an upbringing related to many of the people sitting in the table across from me. Was able to have food on the table, was able to afford an education, was able to have access to a lot of the public amenities and social programs that every citizen in this country is entitled to. I was shocked in a lot of ways to move into this area and work within a lot of the social safety net programs that we have. We have bus stops plastered with advertisements from P, CareerLink, from different organizations around here saying, we have jobs, we're hiring, we're thriving. And the reality is far from the truth. I've seen the homeless encampment grow exponentially since I've been here, and I want to speak out to say that some kind of support network needs to be provided, some kind of social network. As a lot of people who testified here have said, it's no fault of the people who end up homeless that they have ended up in that situation. And with the smallest amount of support, maybe it's disability support that they didn't receive, or some kind of financial support, or primarily housing and access to basic resources like water and food, they'd be able to not only quote unquote turn things around, but able to actually thrive in this community and be strong contributing members. That's about all I have to say, and I yield the rest of my time.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment? Has I had a chance?
Hello, everybody. How you doing? You could just call me Alex. And the city right now is hurting, seeing the homeless people out there. Oh, I don't want to provide my last name. Just see my friend Braden. He's going through it. Just seeing how people are hurting, you know, getting their lights cut off, getting evicted, you know, me, myself. If I seen any of your daughters, if they were partying in, you know, college on Main Street, a girl was walking down, she was a little intoxicated, I pushed her out the way. I didn't get a Silver Star medal, but I said, that's somebody's daughter, they could have got hit by a car. So I'm always going to be for the little guy, always going to be for the people. Anybody could always come up here. I come up here some days and work out, but I just don't like seeing people hurt and struggle and go hungry. And seeing the homeless people, they all come up to me and tell me different stories. And I tell them, I treat you like a person trying to sell me a car, a salesman, because you're human. You're not below me. You're not above me. You're my equal. I can look you in the eye and say, there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing at all. You're a human being. They ask me, do I need food? I come up and I bring anything I can bring them, charge cords, anything I can. If I can do more, I just say, we got to unite as a community, because if one is hurting, then we all hurt, because it just has to fit. And I don't have a problem with the mayor. I don't have a problem with anybody in the community. I'm just saying we have to unite together. Nobody should have to take a dump at the library or go through the embarrassment and the shame of it. So that's all I really got to say. Just, I had to say something today. I couldn't just stand around anymore. Like I said, I've seen plenty of people that needed help. Walk in, if they're drunk, car was coming, and I pushed them out the way, and I thought somebody wouldn't want to see their kid get hurt, so I had to push them out the way and say, you almost got hit by a car, and I said, is she with you? They said, sure, right in front of Hotel Villas. Somebody had mentioned here, because I'm always going to stand up for what's right. I'm never going to be brought down or change who I am, never. So I appreciate everybody's time, and thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the center who wants to make comment, who hasn't had a chance to? Okay, we're to the right. Welcome.
Oh! Sorry, I'm a bit nervous.
That's okay.
I don't usually do this. My name is Amanda White. I'm part of the homeless committee area. I guess my husband, as you said, we have three little ones on the way. I've been doing this for 2 years, not because I wanted to, because of a abusive situation with my ex-husband and my four kids that are with their father, only for now until I'm able to get, you know, out of the situation. So it's kind of very hard, because I try to support my husband and, you know, what, you know, him finding a job, trying to be his support system, trying to, like, keep myself, you know, focused on me at the same time with the babies, and it's just hard doing this. Like I said, we only eat maybe once a day. I just wish there was a lot more that you guys can do to help. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Was there anyone else in the White Center who wants to make comment? Is there anyone else to the right who wants to make comment? Did I miss anyone who didn't have a chance to speak? That's going to conclude our first public comment as we move through the agenda. Our second public comment is for anything that we're going to be voting on this evening. No one had signed up in advance. So again, this is for any ordinance or resolution that council is going to vote on. Is there anyone to the left who wants to comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Anyone to the wide center who wants to make comment on anything we're voting on tonight? Anyone to the right? Moving on to old business. Any old business for members of council? We're going to move on to new business. Any new business from members of council? Councilwoman Leo?
I think we're all going to ask relatively along the same questions before, but before we dive into that one, actually, I think Chief Todd just stepped out to talk to them. So maybe certain questions I have specifically before we move on to the grander, where's this information coming from, is regarding our community health outreach program. Is there anything specific that the health department does with helping get people with disability support, as in like walk them through the process, or what resources do they have there? And also, does the health department do any specific outreach for homeless people or unhoused people that are pregnant? Those are two specific questions I have before all the others.
Councilman Leo, would it be possible for us just to, I mean, there was a lot of information obviously that was shared, and I think different people in this room have different levels of understanding of some of the things that are currently going on. So I would ask respectfully if it might be possible for Ms. Collins and Chief Kopp to kind of lay some of that groundwork as far as what has been our involvement, both in short term and long term, as far as the homeless situation is. This current kind of level of some misinformation has to do with PPNL, who wants to temporarily come in and do some work. But I think before we get to that point, I think there's a bigger point here that we obviously are able to talk to people afterwards about, is about how and who are the people within City Hall that are working on these issues on a day-to-day basis that can be contacted to understand what information is accurate and what information is not accurate, as well as what services provide. And I think listening, and you know, I think all of us probably at some point in the last hour thought, you know, and it's not the way this is structured, we wait till this point to kind of talk, is many of the things that were repeated were just not necessarily consistent with things that were true, both as far as what the city's working on and what is going on with this particular situation. But I think it might be beneficial if we were allowed to allow for Ms. Collins to like go through what Community Connections is, and just some of the other things that are going on as far as, because I will tell you the most touching thing to me is obviously the long-term housing instability stories that we heard here tonight. And it's completely legitimate for people to want to know how in America you can have a job and not have a place to live. We've also been talking and working on this for months and years now, where we talk about what the challenges are with being able to find both places for people to live along the housing continuum and also be able to provide services to people that are needing some place to sleep tonight. So I think it would be an important backdrop to this individual question as far as what PPNL is asking to do on private property to be able to give some background there before we dive into that, if you would allow us to do that.
My grander overarching question was, I'm aware that we have a general understanding that we do not move encampments. So yeah, my overarching question is, can you guys provide some clarity as to what we're hearing about power lines, what we're hearing about movement of people, and just in general, that whole thing? If you have to take those other two questions, awesome, but I'm really curious as to what we're hearing about power lines and moving people.
I'm just going to jump in real quick, Ms. Collins. If you could give us, because we did hear a lot tonight, and I'll be honest, I didn't come to tonight's meeting with any background on the situation over there. So any kind of broad information you could get into, just so we're all on the same page, as the mayor alluded to, about what is going on, what's the city's involvement, all the things you know we're going to ask, and then I'll open it up to everybody.
Sure. So Chief Cut, I think, is in the hall, and she may be able to add a little more context, but the very short answer is that the encampments are not being swept at all. I believe PPNL reached out. There's one single pole that either needs to come down or needs to be worked on. It will happen sometime over the next 6 months. It's temporary. My understanding is Community Connections regularly goes to the encampments to do its regular outreach work. Community Connections is a social work program of our Health Bureau. When they were down there most recently, knowing this information, they mentioned to the people right around, I believe, the one pole that needs to be worked on, that sometime in the next 6 months there will be a very temporary work situation being done at the pole, that they would come back down, obviously, when they knew more specifically when that was happening, and would let them know. I was just giving like very, very, very advanced notice. That's as much information as I believe we have from PPNL at this point. It was not meant to be like alarming in any way. It was not meant to suggest anybody needed to move immediately. And so, you know, I'm not quite sure how that information was spread, but there is no like sweeping of the encampments. I didn't know.
Absolutely no sweeping of the encampments. Even though the Supreme Court ruling came out saying that you can, it does not mean that you should. So we were notified by PPNL that work has to get done on this pole. They said that they, and this is from them, they are saying that they've tried to do it before, that they tried to speak to the individuals down at the encampment and that they faced some resistance. So they reached out to the police department and our community connections program to try to help move the people temporarily from the area so they can do the work and we can continue trying to do our outreach down in the encampment with our unhoused neighbors. Sorry, I wasn't sure.
And Council Moyon, to add to that is we are city staff, whether or not it's community connections with the Health Bureau or people within the other parts of Department of Community Economic Development, are down in the area multiple times a week. That one of the challenges is sharing accurate information in a way that when the information gets diffused and coming in different directions, stopping rumors, stopping information from spreading in a way that continues to be something that we try to do everything we can to stop. It seems like every day or every other day we're answering some type of rumor that the city is trying to go onto Norfolk Southern's private property and move people, which is not true. Norfolk Southern has allowed us and allowed Community Connections onto the property to be able to work with people, to be able to work with trying to help people at New Bethany, trying to help people at BES, trying to help people with different services that are provided through Community Connections. So it is Norfolk Southern private property. We don't even have the ability really there to move people. Not, as we said, that we even would. It's like not even something that we have the power to do here. But it's also a situation where we continuously are down there trying to provide not just services, but accurate information and voices to be able to contact Ms. Berger and the Health Bureau, other people with Community Connections, Ms. Tulo, other people there, as well as a lot of the other nonprofits like New Bethany BES are down there, interacting with a lot of these residents on a day-to-day basis about what services there are to provide. But it continues to be a challenge to both provide accurate information and respond to misinformation. So one of the things that I think is important going forward, and there are clearly a lot of people that are advocates here, and we will be here after the meeting to talk about who those people are, to be able to contact in City Hall if you hear something and says, this just doesn't sound right. This doesn't seem like something that should be going on. Because we are already doing it now, but it is something that we are here to try to share a lot more of the information as far as what we hear and what we're not hearing.
Was there anything else you wanted to add before I think it's
important for, and maybe Ms. Collins can just talk a little bit, because obviously we have different levels of education here as far as what some of the things are that we've been working on. But I think that it would be important for Ms. Collins to kind of talk about our housing initiatives in general here, as well as what we are doing with a recently had Conference of Churches property, as well as some of our ongoing work with BES to be able to find a permanent shelter, and just what we're doing as far as housing is concerned.
Sure. So just on the current situation and the encampments, as Mayor Reynolds was mentioning, Community Connections is working frequently, as are other departments in the city, with all of the service providers who are doing work with this community. So not only are we trying to provide direct service and outreach, share information about different programs that are available or services, certainly I think Chief Cott was just talking specifically with some of the folks who spoke tonight and giving the contact information for Ms. Berger, who can connect somebody who's in that situation, whether with children or pregnant or whatever, like the specific services that are available. So that's happening on a regular basis. Community Connections is on regular calls with the service providers. I think it's once a week, if not once every other week. We're also working with BES regularly. But in terms of like the broader and more systemic solutions,
You know, we've talked a lot about our homelessness plan. We're currently looking at a multi-site solution. I think at the last council meeting, you approved our resolution to put forward a grant application for additional dollars from HUD to support non-congregate shelter units at the property on Packer Avenue that we talked about last week. So that's currently a property that is restricted for affordable housing, but is having a variety of code issues. It's owned by the Conference of Churches. We're applying, we already have $1.4 million. We're applying for an additional about $1.5 million to continue to support not just the improvements to that property, but also to convert some of the units to units that can support families who are experiencing homelessness in a shelter situation. We are also continuing to work with Bethlehem Emergency Shelter, talking with them about the Christ UCC Church, where they currently have a temporary shelter, and how we can support turning a facility into a permanent and a year-round facility. As we know that we don't have one in Bethlehem, there's really not one in the Lehigh Valley that supports the need that we have here in the city. It's something that we're working on regularly, and it's also something we're working on regionally, part of the Three Cities Coalition that the mayor is involved in, and our work with the other departments of community and economic development. We're constantly talking about the regional resources that are available. It's what's prompted the Lehigh Valley RAB, the Regional Homelessness Advisory Board, to ask the city of Bethlehem to apply for emergency solutions grant dollars to support. We applied on behalf of 9 organizations in the Lehigh Valley that are providing homelessness services. So in addition to submitting the grant last Friday for the Hallmark dollars, we also submitted the grant last Friday for those emergency solutions grant dollars as well, just on behalf of the service providers in the region. So we're leading that on behalf of the RAB as well. And then tonight, of course, you'll see, I think, the application for the local share grant dollars, and those are to support the Gateway on 4th project. That's the affordable housing project that we're working on with LVIP and Penrose Development. It's hopefully going to be 120 units in South Bethlehem, and it's a predominantly affordable housing project as well. That's just one of the many, obviously, as you know, affordable housing projects that we're working on, but that's one that has tangible units associated with it as well.
And then just to add to that, we've talked a lot over the past year after we put together Opening Doors about the challenges of building housing units. And we absolutely have a housing crisis going on in America, and it's affecting every single urban and metropolitan area that you're going to find. We do not have enough housing units throughout the Lehigh Valley that on every income level. We've been very honest about that. What Ms. Collins talked about between Gateway and 4th and our neighborhood and our Choice Neighborhoods program with Moravine Pembroke and our ability to be able to build more affordable housing in the city of Bethlehem is you're talking about projects that are $30, $40, $50, $60 million that cannot be done quickly. The thing that we can do quickly is react with compassion, with care, with accountability, with access. And I can tell you that between the Health Bureau, between Community Connections, between everybody with Ms. Collins and Ms. Satullo, with our police department, we have not just a multi-site solution, but we have a multi-organizational solution to dealing with our current unsheltered population. Some of the conversations that came up today having to do with trash, we had individuals down in the area that have been cleaning the canal, that have been cleaning the creek. We've been working with BES. Bob Rapp is a hero, as we know, being able to mobilize individuals down there over the past 6 months to be able to have conversations with individuals. We understand that not everybody is going to be like, come on in, city, and clean this up or do all of these different things, which is why we're relying on a lot of people, including a lot of the incredibly dedicated and passionate individuals today, who we say thank you as well for being, not thinking that you're above this, that just because you have a place to live doesn't mean that it's not your problem that other people don't have a place to live. I've said it before, housing is the number one situation that's facing this country, and we are going to continue to have to deal with it in a systemic level. But in the short term, we are doing everything we can on a day-to-day basis. And more important than that probably is if you want to know what we're doing, we have people that you can contact every single day in different departments, Health Bureau and others, that can tell you what we're doing and what information is true and what information is not. Housing insecurity and lack of housing is obviously, as was mentioned today, the biggest thing that people can possibly deal with. They don't need to deal with misinformation on top of that. or they don't need to deal with additional things to be fearful of. And we're very aware of that. So as soon as we hear anything, the mayor's office, as soon as we hear anything, we think about what are the best avenues that we can do to get out to try to respond to this information. And that's something we continue to do, but I guess I would finish these comments by just saying it's like we will also be here after the meeting. So those of you that want to know who the people are to be able to contact, to be able to get accurate information going forward, we can certainly give you those names and things after the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, and I think that was just helpful background for everybody. We will get back to new business. Councilwoman Leone, do you have any additional questions?
I did. You mentioned the Regional Homeless Advisory Board. It's totally cool if you don't know the makeup of this board off the top of your head, but I'm wondering if there's any representation on the board of people who have experienced homelessness or are currently experiencing homelessness, or if this is a board that is open to the public where people who have real lived experience with this stuff can go to the board and kind of bring their perspectives to this.
I would have to confirm with Sarah Sicillo. She actually sits on the board. My understanding, though, is that it's a part of the continuum of care, so it is service providers who are part of the continuum of care are represented on the board. So it's Lehigh Conference of Churches, it's Bethlehem Emergency Shelter, it's Third Street Alliance. We have a seat as a municipal government, but I think it is structured to involve all of the service providers who are part of the continuum.
It's my understanding that most of the organizations that you just mentioned, New Bethany and Pastor Bob and all those, have a real housing first approach to homelessness, right? Like we try and catch people and keep them in their housing situation before it gets to this point.
Is that, yes.
I believe you might have hit on this, but you said that there are specific resources for people who are in need of maybe disability support financing or pregnant unhoused people that they can reach out to the health department to get specific services for.
Yeah, and I'm not an expert on the individual services, but certainly Benet Berger or Kristen Wenrick or any of the other members of Community Connections could direct you to the specific services. Or not you, but anyone.
And then back to the telephone pole. Is it like a safety thing? Is it just a down cable, or is the pole itself lack structural integrity wise? Is there a very specific reason the pole is being moved?
I'll have to look into it more. I was just told that it was work that needed to be done a while ago. They haven't been able to get the work done, and that it's something that's pressing. So,
and being mindful of everybody's time, and everybody wants to have their say too. But I did have a quick question that's deviating from this, and it was about the bus accident that took place. It was like a school bus and a silver car. I was wondering if you could provide any input as to it happened close to that Cherokee area. Quite a few residents reached out to me about what happened there, and if you can give some kind of
that I would have to look into. No, just because I'm confusing it with the other bus related accident that occurred over on East 4th Street near Edwards.
If you don't mind shooting me an email, I'll just have
that.
A community meeting with them when I head out there. And I just want to be able to give them some details.
Yes, ma'am. I will get the details and I will forward them to you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. I appreciate everyone speaking to their microphone just for the record and those following along at home. And some of the audience who are having a hard time here. Any other new business from members of council? Councilman Francisman. Okay.
Thank you. Still talking about, thank you for the update on the shelter. As far as Lehigh Valley Hardboard, I'm pretty sure that there is someone that is unhoused or at least has a history of being unhoused as a rep, but it is all people that are working in the field of homelessness and housing. I was just wondering, I know this is, who knows, but we're PPNL, is there a way that we can have them hold off until at least BES opens, so at least these folks have a place to go at night to sleep if they need to not be in that encampment for a short period of time?
Again, I'm not sure. It's something I have to look into. They said the work, it was pressing.
It is pressing.
But it's something that I can reach out to them and try to, you know, figure out how pressing it is and on a timeline.
I think that would be, if possible, if they can wait, that can help alleviate some of the issues as far as at least they have a place to sleep at night, you know, if even for a day or two. And I know I said this at the last meeting, for Ms. Collins. I think it's really important. I think it's great we have community connections, and it sounds like there's a lot of multi-systemic issues that these folks are dealing with, unfortunately. It's a lot. And I think it's really important that hopefully Community Connections is aware of all the services available through the County Human Services, because having worked there for years, there is an array of services, and not that I want to pass the buck, we have services we could provide, but they're larger than us, and they actually have more funds and a lot more services. So hopefully, if Community Connections is not aware, certainly someone can come from the county and give them an overview, you know, everything that they have to offer, because I think that's really important that we try to incorporate, you know, county and city services as much as possible.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other new business? Councilwoman Laird?
I just had a couple of questions about the same issue. So one, in terms of being able to communicate important updates or what resources are available for certain circumstances, I know Mayor Reynolds, you said that there's permission requested before for the city to go in and provide information, talk to people. Would Norfolk Southern perhaps allow for some sort of resource posting or brochure box or signs or whatever that might have some of these resources easily accessible for people all the time, or for important updates to actually be posted so that there's less chance for miscommunication?
I think we have posted some things before, depending on what the topic was, but that's something else that we can absolutely talk to. We have interaction with several individuals that are not associated officially with the city, such as Bob Rapp, that visited on a regular basis. But you know, we can continue, and we have often, to be completely honest, we often listen to what people that we do talk to within the community tells us are the best strategies or the best things to do, as far as what's going to be the most effective. And sometimes it is trusted messengers, obviously more so than us. But we absolutely can continue to talk about that and think about that as far as like if there's a best way to go about posting information like that.
And then my other question was, there was a particular officer named as the source of this information, and the name does check out for where that. For the description of the officer, are you able to follow up and just make sure that everybody's on the same page, recognizing there could have been miscommunication from any angle in what was communicated here or there, just to make sure that everybody's got the right message?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
And just Ms. Laird, to add to that, we try to, and I don't want to speak for Chief Cott, we try to limit the interactions where there's just the police officer going down there. It is, I think it's safe to say, rare, Chief Cott. Oftentimes, if there is a message that needs to be delivered or a situation going on that requires a police officer either by choice, sometimes people within that community call the police and someone has to go. But we try to do everything we can to make sure that police officers are not responding to anything on their own without other individuals from Community Connections, without other Health Bureau, without other employees, to be able to go down there being very aware. Norfolk Southern also does have their own police, which obviously don't listen, they don't call us. So like if they're responding to something on their own, that's also been a challenge we've had in the past. The police were here and it's like, well, and then we ask around and it wasn't any of our police. So it is something that we don't really send police officers down. With that being said, all employees that go down there, and obviously our Health Bureau employees are trained to have these interactions, we also continue to be able to have ongoing conversations within whatever employees respond down there about the manner in which they respond, the tone, how we have those conversations, how we approach them. Oftentimes there is a multi kind of step plan to be able to like, okay, this person's gonna go down on day one, and then these two people are going down on day two, and then these people are going down on day three with things not yet to happen. So we try to be as intentional as we can about that, but that includes having own conversations with their own personnel about what's the best way in which to be able to handle these. I never wanna speak that every city employee handles those things perfectly, but it is absolutely a priority that we are focused on.
Yes, thank you, and I do get the impression that the police and the city staff do make every effort to communicate well and to treat people with respect and everything. So, thanks.
Other new business from members of council or House? Councilman Wilhelm?
I don't have any additional questions, but I think I just wanted to acknowledge and address everybody who came to speak on the issue tonight. I think President Colon, you mentioned earlier that this was not a situation you were aware of. I was not either, and I imagine many of us were not. So whether it be a matter of making sure that information is made full and complete, that everyone understands the full picture. You know, there are lots of valid reasons for partial information, misinformation. So I hope that you feel and know that your advocacy and voice does make a difference. You opened up an important conversation, and hopefully we can get everybody on the same page as a result. Thank you.
Other new business?
Ask some follow-up questions.
This wouldn't be the time, but after the meeting, as Mayor Reynolds alluded, the mayor, other members of the administration will be here to speak with anyone in the public who's here and has other questions. Other new business? Councilwoman Kwiatek?
Thank you. First of all, I apologize for not being there tonight. In person, I had every intention, and then I tripped and fell on the sidewalk earlier today and wrenched my foot, and I'm just kind of taking it easy and not putting a lot of weight on it, so apologies. And I want to thank everybody who came out tonight with their who shared their concerns, who shared their personal lived experiences. That's so important, and I hope that folks will come up and talk to us directly. You are welcome, obviously. You are residents of Bethlehem, and I want to reiterate that. I did have one question, which I know that apparently a lot of this information was not factual or misinterpreted, perhaps, in some senses. There was a mention of a mounted patrol coming, and I was wondering if that was factual or if that was not true. Chief Cobb.
So that's something that I'm going to have to look into. I know in the past our mounted officers have gone out with community connections just because they're able to cover more ground. Also, the name may check out with being a mounted officer as well, so that's something I'm going to look into, ma'am.
Okay. I mean, I would have a concern with that just because different people have different reactions to horses, to mounted patrols. Certainly in some cities when they have swept encampments, they've used their mounted patrols. So that was just something that kind of caught my ear. So that was a concern. And I also just wanted to say that, you know, when the Supreme Court decision came down that allowed municipalities to essentially fine and punish people for being unhoused, you know, it was important to me to know that this is not what we stand for in Bethlehem. As Ms. Collins shared, there is a tremendous amount of work that has been going on for the last 2.5 years regarding all of this, and very much happening from a position of housing first. So to everybody who came for the first time tonight, I hope it's not your last time. I hope you'll come, continue to be engaged and hear about all of the things that we are working on. We're all impatient and it all takes too much time and people are hurting in the meantime. And so those programs and those things that the city is doing are so important, and it's so important to make sure that the communication is happening and that we're getting it as right as we can. That's all I had. Thank you.
Other new business from members of council? Just a couple things I would say, and I appreciate, well, one, I appreciate everybody who came out this evening. As I said, I walked into town hall tonight with no knowledge or awareness of the situation that's been discussed for the last 2 hours. But also, I hope everyone who spoke tonight and always speaks with our previous meetings this year and in the future always feels welcome. As council president, I speak for council as a whole. I like to think that even despite sometimes having disagreed with members of the public who come out to give perspectives or opinions that might be different than mine, or even as we as council members disagree, as we've talked about at different times, that everyone feels welcome, that everyone who comes here tonight with a purpose and something that's important to them to speak about feels that this is a place where they can effectively communicate, where they can tell us what it is that's going on, and feel that they're shown the respect to, even if we may not agree, that council will at least listen, and the administration, as we alluded to before, is here. And while solutions, I always use the example that life is more of a light dimmer, where things happen slowly, things get brighter or darker. It's not a light switch where we can just hit a switch and things turn on or turn off. at the speed we'd like, as Councilwoman Kwiatek alluded to a moment ago. But I think it's important, and I appreciate the background that was given before, that a lot of us, the council, the administration, the community, have a lot of the same shared opinions about how we should be focusing energy, whether it's council supporting some of the things that Ms. Collins have brought forward, the administration that is here dozens and dozens of hours every week working towards these initiatives, members of the public who volunteer on different boards, authorities, or just coming out to give your opinion. So I do hope everyone felt, if nothing else, that this was a place where they could come and again, tell us what it was that they were thinking. I do recognize and appreciate that there is a certain vulnerability when talking about our homeless population, and whether it's the authority that comes with a badge and a uniform, or just someone who is coming to deliver knowledge that, or tell you that something project is going to be happening there, that we continue just to effectively communicate with those who are residing in the encampment. Because from what we heard at the start, there was a very big disconnect between in 2 weeks everything's going to be cleared out versus what I hear to be more of the situation that's going on, that PPL gave this sort of broad timeline of when this is going to be going on and this work to the pole. That doesn't stop the other work that was going on, but it's at least encouraging to know that it's not to the severity that I may have interpreted some of the comments to be. So and just from my understanding, and whoever wants to take this, Norfolk Southern owns the property, but it's a PPL pole, so they have the right to go in there and to do the work on the utility or whatever they have to. And historically, have Norfolk Southern and or PPL been effective communicators to the city as in regarding these kind of projects? Did you have any, let me ask it this way in just a broad sense without getting too critical of them. How much heads up were given of this situation?
Not a lot.
Okay.
And this was actually the first I've heard of their repeated attempts in the past. So we were given very short notice. It was towards the end of last week, I believe, or the beginning of last week, was when PBNL reached out to us about the need to do this work. As for the particular area where the pole is located, I don't want to misspeak. I thought that it may not be Norfolk Southern property. It may be city property, but I don't want to misspeak on that. That's something that I can find out for members of council.
Understood. And that's something that I think we'd all be interested to know once that's figured out exactly where, and I don't know if that necessarily alleviates PPL's rights to go, whether the pole is on Norfolk Southern land or someone's backyard. I think PPL has the authority to go in and do the work to the utility that they need, but I would just hope that now and in the future they would be communicative with everyone regarding projects like this, so that we could use our resources like we talked about with community connections. And I appreciate, as the mayor alluded to, and I believe as Councilwoman Laird had spoke about, just looking at what's the best way to get messaging out there and keep it out there. Because I think that's often happens in my own experience, that a message might come through one time, and if you weren't there, how are you going to know? And then things happen sort of, someone hears third hand, fourth hand, fifth hand, and then things get lost as it goes further down the communication chain. So looking at best ways, we talked about people staying after the meeting, talk about who to contact or where to contact. I think that's relevant to have in different channels out there so that people that aren't here maybe tonight but are affected by this have somewhere, whether it's your social media, the city website, whatever it would be, just word at one location to direct questions or different resources, but to get answers, because that's something that we hear about, you know, from time to time. Either someone hears something fifth hand, or they will have a question, but they don't know who to turn to necessarily. So, and again, I just want to thank everyone for coming out and thank Mayor Reynolds, Chief Cott, Ms. Collins, regarding just that update and clarification for everybody. Was there anything as it relates to that I misspoke about or that seemed out here? Thank you. And thanks for updates periodically as we go along. because if it's going to be this undefined timeline, I think it's relevant for all of us. If it becomes more clear, or the utility communicates more defined timeline, that's obviously what's of highest concern and priority. Even if it's a temporary displacement, what does that look like? Where do people temporarily get displaced to? The only other thing I had that I think we didn't get to yet for Mr. Miller to read, but I do want to address the memo. It's Council Agenda Item 6C that we're receiving only for information, but I wanted to bring it up during new business because I think it's very relevant that we talk about it while we have the floor. So it's the 2025 budget for the pension minimum NISQA obligation. Again, we're not voting on this tonight. This is only for information. It came from Mr. Evans to members of council, but we've sort of alluded to this over the months as it relates to the actuaries who talk about what our pension obligations are going to be. And again, if anyone follow along, we're going to change gears a little bit from what we've been talking about, but I still encourage everyone who has interest about what we're talking about with the encampment and as it relates to homelessness to stick around for the end of the meeting. But as it relates to the minimum municipal obligation, so Mr. Evans, I'm going to turn to you in a moment, but I just wanted to address the memo that essentially we are given these dollar amounts by the actuaries independent of the city, correct? That we don't determine what it is, and the it's abbreviated MMO, essentially our minimum municipal obligation. It's what we're told we have to contribute to these pension funds to keep them solvent, I'd say, in simplest terms. Now, the financial requirements, and this is for the end of calendar year 2025, to be paid by December 31, 2025, our financial requirements amount to, for the police department fund, $7,869,539. For the fire department fund, that would be $3,662,763. And then for PMRS, essentially our non-police and fire pension participants, it's $4,801,629. And of that, our contribution, the minimum that we have to contribute, amounts to just over $7 million for the police fund, just under $3 million for the fire fund, and just under $3 million for the PMRS pension. So, Mr. Evans, I wanted you to take a couple minutes, please, and I appreciate the memo that came out just to keep council informed, to give us a little background about where these numbers come from, what these numbers mean. I alluded to that this is our, and it's in our budget book for this year. Every year, our budget book has our pension contributions. But can you just put in context what these numbers look like versus what we've been seeing historically and what we can expect to see this to look like when the 2025 budget is released later this year?
These are the exact numbers that will be in the 2025 budget later this year. These are numbers that have increased significantly since last year. And if you remember when we talked in the spring, this is the impact of the drop of the market in 2022. There's a delay from when the market closes. We have an actuary that works on the numbers, and those numbers are calculated every other year. So 1/1/23 was the closure of the markets that they use, actually the 12/31 numbers, so as of 1/1/23. They'll use the 21 and 22 market results throughout 2023. We'll reconcile all the accounts so we know what our market value of our pension funds are. Later in 2023 and into 2024, it goes into the hands of the actuary. The actuary will use the market value of our pension fund. It'll also calculate a lot of data that we provide with regard to how many people are in the plan, the age of the people in the plan, how many years they've served, to calculate using mortality tables how long they expect each person to be able to eventually collect on those pensions. So it's a long and detailed calculation. That worksheet will be provided to me in mid-August. We'll use some information from a worksheet that the actuary provides, using information we've collected also during this year in order to calculate that MMO. But I think really the big news is that they jumped collectively over $2 million from last year, the MMOs, to this year, those three line items will move up $2 million, and that's a big jump before anything else starts in our 2025 budget. It's just been an early sign that it's going to be a very challenging year in order to put a budget together, because there's also contractual salary obligations and any other inflationary pressures we face with all our vendors, with our medical and others. So we'll be working, we have been working very hard in order to put a budget together best we can, but this is a known number already that will be in the 2025 budget.
And then for budget year, which is calendar year 2026, the same number?
Close to it. It'll use the same actuarial values from our pension fund. What will change is the number of participants in the plan, the amount of money they're making. They'll all be getting a salary increase, a contractual increase of 3%. So you could assume it might be this number plus 3%, because our staffing levels should be about the same in the police and the fire. So if we're using the same number of people, some are coming, some are going. There'll be distributions. People are collecting pensions every day that are, you know, are still out, that have been retired. So when all that gets put together, it'll come out to a number somewhere close. Yeah, when I say close, within a couple hundred thousand. So if it's 7 flat for police, maybe 7.2, 7.3 next year.
Can you?
But it won't be a wild swing as we have this year.
Can you speak a little bit to, if you have this information, if not, we could talk about this more when we get to budget season. Can you speak to what the anticipated or expected returns are on these funds versus what the actual performance of the funds was?
Last year, I have 2023 going into our next valuation, like the one 2025, which is coming up at the end of this year.
So the one that was just used. So that we saw the big jump. Were we just looking at kind of higher levels of market performance in these funds, and now it dropped off a little bit, or is there an anticipated return that these funds now underperformed, and now we're seeing this big jump? Are we seeing just based on the data that they look at and more people drawing on these funds? Can you speak to what a little bit of is there one key variable that led to the big jump in what our minimum municipal obligation is? The
contributions are quite steady, depending on which, whether you're fire, police, or PMRS. The employees put in a set amount, might be 5%, 8%, or 7.5%, depending on which pension fund you're in. So if you ever look in our audit book, you'll see each year the member contributions, and you see it on my memo here. For this, the anticipated employee contribution for next year for the police is $813,000. If you look through the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, it's quite consistent. That number doesn't change. Disbursements also stay about the same moving out. It's the market, it's the primary driver. And in 2022, if you recall back to that year, was an awful year for the markets. Our fund lost money for the first time in some time. We're well diversified, we're protected, but there's really no safe harbor in 2022. So that's a primary hit. I'll tell you, since that time, 2023 was a good year. The return on our portfolio and our funds was 11%, and that's good for 1 year. Our expected rate of return is 7. So if we hit that 7 each year, which is tough to do year in, year out, because there are always, when the market corrects itself or makes adjustments, that are unavoidable no matter what you're invested in. So last year was 11, and this year it's also doing pretty well, but we're not quite 3/4 through the year with an election cycle ahead. But things so far through this year have been pretty favorable. So we're hoping this 2-year cycle, which ends at the end of this year, would be strong. The fact we have an 11% already in the can, that's good. If this year continues moving along in the same manner, it should be okay. And we still, again, still may face a small increase in the MMO because salaries of the participants are going up. But it won't be what we're looking at here.
But even with a strong year now, we're still locked into these numbers for next year.
Yeah. What we're having now will impact us 2 years from now.
And is there, I know we see it in budget every year, can you speak to what kind of state aid comes in to offset some of these obligations?
The state aid is budgeted at $4.2 million. So that's a number we receive to offset the pensions. That number is unknown in an exact form until September. So we have not received it yet. We'll be receiving it sometime later this month. It'll arrive in the form of a wire transfer with an email. And you'll get that memo as well to know exactly what that number is. But that's a calculation done by the state and then sent to us with a cover memo.
Do we know how that number in terms of relief that comes from the state is calculated, or is that pretty flat? Or should be expected to be fairly flat, regardless of increases we might see as a city?
It will increase with the size of our MMO, and we also submit a very detailed data file that includes all our participants, the time served, their age. So they also collect a lot of information that they use in order to perform that calculation.
But at the end of the day, we're going to be looking at about $2 million more for 2025.
Yeah.
And this is not, we don't volunteer this. We're obligated to contribute this, correct?
Yes. But this is the minimum amount required in order to keep the funds solvent.
Understood. And I know we'll have more questions or more discussion come budget season, but I did want to recognize it now because you sent that memo. So thank you.
Important. Thank you.
Mr. Callahan?
How much money do we have left over from the American Rescue Fund?
Well, there's about, if you look in the capital plan, in our capital cap, from the 22 allocations, about 5 million, I'm sorry, from the 24 allocations, 5 million left. There's 1 million left from the 22 allocation. And the funding that's available in 0901 accounts, which are the civic expense line for housing, affordable housing. There's one for sheltering, there's a line item. So I don't have those numbers with me tonight, but.
But the, I might be wrong, but I thought that when those funds were dispersed to the cities and the states, that we were allowed to use those funds for lost revenue.
Correct.
So we should be able to hypothetically take the $2 million extra that we have to pay next year and use the American Rescue Fund, which those funds were originally.
Yeah, there's a hard stop on pension, though. They said they're not by any means allowed to be deposited, and we signed a certification to be used to put into pension funds. There was a clear rule on that one for whatever reason, but that was, yeah.
Yeah. And just to add to that, Mr. Callahan, I think your question is a legitimate one. Is like our plan that we had laid out to what to do with our $34 million, they're really unspent on, it's not, there's next year is the last year that we're using $2 million of the ARPA dollars for what is called the lost revenue from back in the calculations during the pandemic. The only other like new spending we have going forward for next year, as far as that's concerned, is going to be the capital dollars that we have set aside to avoid the borrowing to be able to do the roads and things like that. So that's where the capital projects are. But as far as like unallocated, we planned for the idea that like $2 million is the lost revenue that we're using towards next year's budget. We'd use $2 million of like the lost revenue from like a lack of EIT and whatever over 4 years. Next year is the last year that we're doing that. So that's where like the last of the $2 million, the last of the ARPA dollars.
Thank you. Any other new business from members of council before we continue? Thank you, Mayor Reynolds, everyone in the administration. We're going to move on to communication. Communication 6A.
In August 28, 2024, memorandum from City Solicitor John S. Burke Jr. with an attached use permit agreement and resolution. Permittee is Christmas City Spirits LLC, with the subcommittee of the Redevelopment Authority of the City of Bethlehem. The event is Night Market. Event dates are 3 to 8 p.m. on both October 5th and 19th. The duration will be 1 to 9 p.m. on both dates. The approved premises will be the Nevin Place right of way and West Walnut Street, as well as Redevelopment Authority owned parcel located at the Sun Inn Courtyard. Both locations are shown on an exhibit attached to the agreement.
And we're going to vote on Resolution 10A this evening. It's on the agenda. Communication 6B.
In August 28, 2024, memorandum attached proposed resolution from Laura Collins, Director of Community and Economic Development. Ms. Collins seeks permission to apply for two local share account grants administered by the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Financing Authority. One grant seeks $2 million under Monroe County funding, and the other grant seeks another $2 million in additional funding under Lehigh and Northampton counties. The grants are being sought on behalf of developer Penrose LLC for the first phase of construction for the mixed-use housing development Gateway on 4th and South Bethlehem.
Resolutions 10B and 10C are on the agenda tonight. Communication 6C.
An August 27, 2024 memorandum from Business Administrator Eric Evans regarding the 2025 budget for the pension minimum municipal obligations. Act 205, the pension reform law, requires the Chief Administrative Officer to submit for 2025 purposes financial requirements of the plans and the minimum municipal contributions to plans of the governing body of the city. Based on the most recent actuarial valuations and payroll data, the minimum municipal contributions that will need to be budgeted for 2025 are as follows. Police, $7,055,637. Fire, $2,989,039. And PMRS, $2,951,877.
And as you just heard a few minutes ago, that memo was sent for information only. We'll discuss that further come budget season. Communication 60.
An August 26, 2024 memorandum and proposed amended ordinance from BCEB business manager Tiffany Wismer. Ms. Wismer explains the need to amend ordinance 2421 to fulfill the original intent to increase funding for ADA curbs and ramps by $153,054.
And ordinance 9A is on the agenda tonight. 6E.
An August 26, 2024 memorandum and proposed amended ordinance from DCED business manager Tiffany Wismer. Ms. Wismer explains that if ordinance 2024-21 is amended, then section 1 of ordinance 2024-22, home budget adjustment, should be amended to accurately reflect new total figures.
And ordinance 9B is on the agenda. Communication 6F.
An August 23rd, 2024 memorandum and proposed ordinance from Public Works Director Michael Alcall. Mr. Alcall explains that it is necessary to revise the amount of money received from UGI to cover paving reimbursement associated with utility work. The revision will decrease money in the non-utility capital fund budget.
An ordinance 9C is on the agenda. Reports, I have nothing to report this evening. Mr. Mayor?
I would start with Administrative Order Number 2024-29. I hereby appoint Ian Van Halen, 127 East Wall Street, Bethlehem, PA, 18018, to the Bethlehem Authority. This appointment is effective through January 2029.
Administrative Order appointing Ian Van Halen to the Bethlehem Authority. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Crampson Smith.
Any discussion on the appointment? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Crampson Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. And I do want to take note that Mr. Van Halen is here in attendance today. So thank you for volunteering. And I also would, at this moment, before I'll run through my other updates quickly, but I did want to take a minute to acknowledge the passing of Tom Donches this week. Who was a member of our authority. I see Mr. Domchek back there, who served with him as well. There was a lot written in the newspaper about Mr. Donches, who grew up here in the city, who was a very dedicated to his community, dedicated to his family, dedicated to the city. He served on the Water Authority. He would always have a sunny disposition when he was coming into City Hall, and he did a lot for our community. And, you know, obviously he was well known for being a star at Penn State and things like that, but, you know, you wouldn't know that when you talked to him. And, you know, he was one of the many people that make our city go, both in the private sector, he had a long career at Air Products, but then also volunteering during his retirement to serve on the Water Authority and take all of that business expertise. You know, and he was just... as I've said many times, our jobs are easier because there are so many people in the community that want to do the right thing and want to be involved in things like that. And Mr. Donches was one of those people. And I wanted to just publicly acknowledge him, especially here today as we are appointing Ian to be his replacement. But I'd sent a note to Tom's wife today,
and he, as I said, he will be missed. And he was a good guy.
A couple other just updates here quickly. Mr. Evans did mention, our budget conversations coming up. Obviously, a lot of those are in depth. I really encourage anybody in City Council that has any question about any department to sit down, to be able to meet with you virtually, in person, however you want to do it, to talk about any of those budgets in the next, as we've said, they're coming together now, so doing it tomorrow might not be able to give all of the clarity on the information. But I know those meetings can be very intense as far as information is concerned. So, we're over 2 months out, or just a little bit under 2 months out. So I would encourage anybody on council that has any questions to reach out to sit down with them. Just a couple other things. One is council had supported a couple years ago the purchase of Camino, which was our online special events permitting technology that's really, really done special things for our community. It's made it more efficient. We are taking now all special events online, so we are no longer taking any paper events. The process become a lot more efficient. These are the type of things that don't get headlines, but they're the type of thing, as we say, like the grind of good government. It's like every week you would have a group of people, Mr. Evans, representatives from each of these different departments that would sit down. We essentially had to build this particular software to meet our individual permit like needs, which I know from Ms. Laird's professional experience outside of City Council, it's not always an easy process to be able to do. It took us a while. We had people come in to be able to do different permitting, but this is the type of thing that allows us to be able to focus on the big things, and it makes employee time more efficient. It makes that experience more efficient. It used to be that if you want to do a special event, you would come in, and different people called a gauntlet or whatever, that you would sit there, and all these people that worked in City Hall for many years would be like, can't do this, you need to do that, or you can't do this, you need to do that. It just was not a good experience. And there are employees within the city and all the departments, legal included, that kind of sat down. I believe it was Ms. Shields that had worked on this when she was here as well, to be able to make that process more efficient. And it really is, it's really going the right direction. Our next opening doors meeting is Thursday, October 26th. I think the doors open at 6 o'clock, but the actual program begins at 6:30, or Mr. Tullo and others will be giving our updates on Gateway and Fourth and things like that. One thing I would say, Councilman Cramsey-Smith, I don't want to bring it up again, but you talked about the county interaction as far as some of the things with homeless services. I personally think there's even more progress that can be made in that regard. The cities, I really think, are doing a lot here, and I know that people, last week or 2 weeks ago, when we had voted to be able to take some of those dollars because Allentown didn't have the grant together, it was because they looked at us and they looked at individuals like yourself, others in council, and us as advocates for this. But I really think the next step, as far as those services, and not just the services about calling people, but just the advocacy for some type of regional-wide initiatives here, is the type of thing that we need both counties to be involved in. So I didn't want to interrupt, but that was one thing I wanted to say. So thank you for making that point. Also, we are undergoing, there were comments here today about public space and streets. We do at council, I think at the last meeting, had approved we're in the process of approving a contract for the bike plan, the complete streets plan, which will be looking at how we use public property, which is going to be a big deal going forward. This Saturday, right outside 4:30, we have a tree planting you might have read about in the newspaper, associated with a documentary called Rooted that focuses on the art scene from the 70s. With some of our familiar names, Doug Royston, Bridget and Bill George, Dave Fry. So we're actually planting that tree at 4:30. If it rains, we're going to do it on Sunday. Earlier on Saturday, over at Bernie Fritz Park, from 11 to 1, City Arts and Moravian are celebrating the Peace Mural that was built over there. You may have seen the article about that too. There's going to be music and arts table and things like that. We had a successful public shuttle with Arts Quest during Music Fest. I was talking to Mr. Furniture about that today. We were able to take hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of car trips off of the roads. I think it turned out to be something like 2,500 people had ridden that, which was an impressive number. When you think about it, obviously we know that over 1 million people come, but that reduction in car trips is obviously a huge deal. Next Saturday, on September 14th at 10 a.m., we have the Chilean flag raising outside. And then the last thing I would say is that on September 20th at 1 p.m., right here, we are doing our big Bethlehem Sister City ceremony with Batias in Puerto Rico. We have representatives from Batias that are coming. Ms. Santora has spent a lot of work planning just a couple of days here, but it is a big deal. Ms. Santora and I were on Audio Ortiz's WDIY program last week talking about that Sister City process, what it means, bringing people together. We've had a ton of positive interactions and just a ton of work that's been done by volunteers, Guillermo Lopez, and so many other people. And on September 20th, right here, we are signing. There are over a couple days. There's a bunch of different events there on the 19th, the 20th, and the 21st. But that's the big one where we do the signing. So if anybody's able to come by, that'll be our next Sister City. And like I said, we're super excited about that. And I think with that being said, I'm done with my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. One question, I may have missed it if you said it, but I just want to make sure. For opening doors, what's the location for that?
It's over at the Fowler Center.
Understood.
The same location.
What do you think? Thank you. Councilwoman Leo.
The Public Safety Committee met earlier this evening on Tuesday, September 3rd, 2024, in Town Hall. There was one agenda item to be reviewed involving the police department. The police department's plan to curtail the illegal use of dirt bikes and ATVs on city roads. The committee voted unanimously to place the ordinance on the city council agenda this evening. Rachel Leon, Chairwoman Bethlehem for Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Councilwoman. We're going to move on to our ordinances for final passage. Mr. Miller, Bill 27, 2024.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the general fund budget for 2024. Bill number 27, 2024, sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Any discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Ms. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Agenda item 8B.
Ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2024 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 28, 2024, is sponsored by Ms. Kwiatek and Ms. Leon.
Discussion? Call the roll, please.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Moving on to new ordinances, Bill 29, 2024.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending Community Development Block Grant Fund Budget for 2024. Bill number 29, 2024, is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion. We'll call roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Bill 30, 2024.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the Community Development Block Grant Fund Budget for 2024. Bill number 30, 2024, is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? Call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Bill 31, 2024.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2024 capital budget for non-utilities. Bill number 31, 2024, sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Discussion? Councilwoman Laird?
Just a brief comment. I watched that committee meeting on YouTube as it was happening and heard some conversation about the term highway. And I don't think it would be a substantive change. Yes.
We're on agenda item 9C for the UGI pavement.
I jumped ahead.
We've all been there.
I was anxious to say it. All right. Sorry.
Some of us have been there several times. Don't worry about it. Any discussion on 9C? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colum?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Mr. Miller, please read Bill 32, 2024.
Ordinance.
Motorbike ordinance.
Of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, establishing Article 525 of the Codified Ordinances of the City of Bethlehem, titled All-Terrain Vehicles and Dirt Bikes, and establishing prohibited offenses involving the operation within city limits. Bill number 32, 2024, is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Crampson-Smith.
Discussion?
So that term highway in the ordinance, I don't think it would be a substantive change, but if it could
be... You speak in the microphone, please. I had a hard time hearing you.
We heard you, Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
If that could be expanded on in the body of the ordinance, I think it would be more clear. Like, even just thinking through if a press contact pulls out a quote from that without looking at the definition from the state code, it could really be misleading.
I talked to the solicitor about that in between the meetings.
We could graft the definition from Section 102 of the Vehicle Code, which I can read now if you want to make that part of the motion, into the definition, into the ordinance.
Sure.
Could we hear it first before it's...
I just want to make a couple just general procedural points, just for everyone's understanding, before any amendments are proposed. This is the first reading for the ordinance. As with any ordinance, we always have two readings. This is the procedure. We would have to, this has happened over the last couple years, we talk about if anything's changed and having to re-advertise. If it's something that's de minimis in terms of just cleaning up language or something like that, it doesn't have to happen on the floor tonight. If someone wanted more time to consider exactly what we would be amending, and I'll let our solicitor correct me if I'm wrong, but I think something like what you're alluding to, if you wanted more time to propose something or to come up with whatever that language would be, would it be a substantial change that we couldn't vote on the amendment at the next reading and then pass the ordinance at the second reading at the next amendment, at the next meeting?
That is correct. It would be de minimis. However, this is an established definition that we would be importing to the ordinance.
Understood.
Can I clarify?
I would say Councilwoman Laird or whomever wants to, can we speak to what exactly it is that we'd be changing and why we'd be changing it?
My thought was basically just a parenthetical definition of the word highway per the code from the vehicular code, I think it is, so that people don't see that word and think, oh, I can't ride my dirt bike on 378, 22, and 78, but actually understand that it's on all roads in the city.
Can I just ask to clarify that? So if we just add that definition in, can we vote on it tonight then and the next meeting, or do we need to delay it? There's no need for a delay.
Okay. All right.
Can we hear the definition before anybody adds it as an amendment?
Well, that would be part of any motion that would be made. I would say, like with any amendment, I would open discussion from all members of council before we propose any amendments, if that's fair, and then we could have Solicitor Stewart read whatever it would be that we'd be adding. Ms. Laird, you're the one that referenced making an amendment or a motion. Are you agreeable to that?
Whatever that procedure should be, yes.
I don't want to say what it should be, that's what I'm asking for.
Everybody
but
can comment, and then we hear the definition.
Understood. Did you have any other comments, Councilman? Any other discussion from members of council?
I just think it's a very good idea that we include it so that we can be very clear on, so that people cannot say, you know, they misinterpret it to be a real, like, highway.
Any other discussion? Councilwoman Kwiatek?
Sorry, we're in general discussion now, not specific discussion about a proposed amendment, because we haven't actually had a motion for an amendment, right?
That would be correct.
Okay. So my only comment is basically all of my questions were answered during the committee, and I appreciate Cott and others for coming and sharing their thoughts. I would like to add snowmobiles to the list along with ATVs and dirt bikes, which would require us to both add the word snowmobile to the section of the prohibitions and also the legal definition in the definitions list as well. And I can discuss why if we want to, if a motion, if it actually gets to two motions, if it gets a second, I should say. But basically, as I said in the committee, there have been instances of snowmobiles on my street, Spring Street, during snow or ice, especially ice. They really like the ice. It has happened several times over the years, and I just think for our own consistency and ability to enforce, it would be good to have that in there. And it is in the Commonwealth's law prohibiting these types of vehicles on roads and municipalities, so it's not inconsistent with what the Commonwealth law says.
Councilwoman, as you alluded to, we're still in discussion. Are you going to wait to make your motion until we conclude discussion on it, or did you want to make that motion now? As I had shared before, I always invite full discussion on anything before we propose anything.
Yeah, along with Ms. Laird, I'll withhold until everybody's had a chance to say it and then see if there is an appetite for it.
Understood. Chief Cott, if you don't mind coming to the lectern, because we did have, to anyone who wasn't here earlier, we did have this Public Safety Committee meeting. Can you briefly, and you don't need to restate everything that was said at committee, but can you just speak to the power that this ordinance gives the police department to enforce how people are operating ATVs and dirt bikes and potentially other vehicles within city limits, how it changes things from today to enactment, and what power it does give the police department?
So state law, the statute, affords us the power to seize an illegally used dirt bike or ATV on a roadway in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. Turning that and including that in an ordinance in the city of Bethlehem just makes things cleaner and easier. After we got done discussing the matter with the Northampton County District Attorney's Office, it was an agreement that we decided to create this ordinance to make it easier for us to do that, to seize these vehicles that are being illegally and recklessly driven on our streets. It still gives officers the discretionary ability to just cite or to possibly give a warning. But for individuals that are engaging in that reckless behavior and are repeat offenders, it gives us the capability to seize that vehicle that is being illegally operated.
Thank you, Chief Cotton, for that background. Any other discussion from members of council before we move on?
I just was wondering if Chief Cotton could give us her opinion, since you put a lot of work into this, for the two amendments that we're discussing, or the two changes. What are your thoughts?
So I am not a lawyer. So I did do my best on it. I do realize, though, that it would be incredibly helpful to kind of better explain the highway portion of it. If that's the will of council, then by all means, we can make it happen. As well as I do believe we talked about it, but if we have to spell out about the snowmobiles, I'd be willing to do that as well.
Can we ask Solicitor Spurk for his opinion, Nancy?
Fine with me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Council. Any other discussion from members of council? Thank you, Chief Cott. So I will turn back to members that alluded to making amendments to the ordinance. I'll start with Councilwoman Laird.
Solicitor, can you please read the definition so that we understand what would be added?
Certainly. The vehicle code defines a highway as the entire width between the boundary lines of every way publicly maintained, when in any part thereof is open to the use of the public for purposes of vehicular travel. The term includes a roadway open to the use of the public for vehicular travel on grounds of a college or a university or a public or private school or public or historical park. That is the definition.
And would, Ms. Laird, just to help with clarification, so, and I want to speak for you, but is your motion then to include under the definition section, so 525.02, where it reads definitions, is your intent to include highway and the definition that Attorney Stewart just read in definitions?
Yes, I initially said parenthetically, but I think just looking again at the document, that would be the place to add it.
Understood. So the motion is made by Councilwoman Laird to add the definition of the highway, and then as defined by Attorney Stewart. That's the motion. Is there a second?
So it would be as defined by the code that you're...
Oh, yes. As yes. Read. Yes. Thank you.
From section 102 of the vehicle code.
That's quite a way to define it extemporaneously. But the... As was read by Attorney Stewart, that's the motion on the floor. Is there a second? Second by Councilwoman Wilhelm. Any discussion on the motion to amend by adding that definition? We'll call the roll on the amendment.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. The motion passes 7-0. It's now highway. And the definition as read by Attorney Stewart is included in the ordinance. Councilwoman Kwiatek, I'll turn to you for any potential amendments.
Thank you. So my motion to amend would be to add within the prohibitions in section A, number one, after the words dirt bike, the words or snowmobile, and then to also correspondingly in the section 525.02 definitions, to add the definition of a snowmobile as defined in the vehicle code of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Do you have that definition, Attorney Stewart, to read from the vehicle code?
I read it earlier. Now I just need to... Okay. The definition of a snowmobile from section 7702 of the vehicle code is an engine-driven vehicle which is all of the following. Number one, is designed to travel over snow or ice. Number two, has an endless built track or tracks. Number three, is steered by a ski or skis. Number four, has an overall width of 48 inches or less. It then specifies that this term does not include a farm tractor, construction equipment, military vehicle, vehicle with inflatable tires or machinery used strictly for the grooming of snowmobile trails. This term includes vintage snowmobiles, which is likewise defined as a snowmobile that is at least 25 years old and is not operated in this Commonwealth except at vintage snowmobile events.
I will note that in the language as it currently stands, the term all-terrain vehicle is defined with just a reference to the vehicle code, and if that is preferable to folks, in this instance, I would be fine with that as well. So that it doesn't add, you know, all of that, but rather at least, I mean, I think people have a working idea of what a snowmobile is, and then to just refer to section 7702 of the vehicle code as this does with the all-terrain vehicle term, that would also be okay by me. So my motion is, again, adding the words or snowmobile after the word dirt bike in section A of the prohibitions in item number one, and then the corresponding definition of snowmobile, either the full definition or I have to pick one, don't I? I would say to add the definition in the same way that all-terrain vehicle is defined with a reference to the section of.
So the motion on the floor, just so I can make sure I'm restating it, Councilwoman Kwiatek, is to add or snowmobile to 525.03 prohibitions in section A, subsection 1. And then to add under definitions the reference to the vehicle code for snowmobile. Am I following along correctly?
Yes.
Thanks.
Just want to make sure. So that is the motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Leone. Any discussion on Councilwoman Kwiatek's motion to amend to include snowmobile? We'll call the roll on that motion.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. So now we're on the ordinance as amended.
President Colon, there's one more amendment we need to make. So I make a motion to amend on page 2 under 525.02 definitions where it says dual sport motorcycle that it needs to be titled and registered with PennDOT, not the department. So delete the department and add PennDOT. We discussed that at the committee meeting that we needed to amend that.
Understood. Thank you, Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith. So the motion on the floor is under definitions, dual sport motorcycle. Towards the end of that sentence where it reads, the department will be deleted and in its place added PennDOT, so that the full definition reads, is a motorcycle that is designed and manufactured to be ridden on and off-road and is titled or registered with PennDOT for on-road use. That's correct?
Correct.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Councilwoman Leone. Any discussion on Councilwoman Cramsey-Smith's amendment? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. The amendment passes 7-0. Any further discussion from members of council on the ordinance as is amended? Mr. Callahan?
I just want to thank everybody that worked on this. I think the downtown business owners and residents and people that visit Main Street, Broad Street, and 3rd and 4th Street on the south side, our central business districts are going to appreciate this. So I thank all of council for working on this. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the ordinance as amended? Chief Cott, I had one quick question for Attorney Spur, Attorney Stewart, whoever. So I'm reading under forfeiture. We did not, so I see these vehicles of, as it relates to the police shall immediately seize and impound the all-terrain vehicle or dirt bike. And then in section B under forfeiture, again, it's reference to fines and all-terrain vehicle or dirt bike operating in violation of this ordinance. It continues on. As it relates to forfeiture, could we include snowmobile in there? Is that encompassed in what powers we have? Attorney Spurk, I've seen you shake your head. Can you just confirm that I'm...
Yeah, the state law authorized it for the dirt bikes and the other things that are already in there.
Okay, but not for snowmobiles. Understood.
Correct.
Yeah. Are we sure? I apologize for not noticing that there were other places where snowmobiles should be added.
I'm not making that motion. That's why I wanted to check with our law bureau, and Attorney Spurk is indicating that we are not permitted to see snowmobiles. Is that correct, Attorney Spurk?
Correct. It's not covered in 3722.
They amended state law a couple of years ago. It was for dirt bikes, as a deterrent for dirt bikes. That was all that was included.
Understood. So I will not be making that motion. I just wanted to clarify to make sure everything reads cleanly. Any other discussion on the ordinance as amended?
We will call the roll on the ordinance.
Ms. Leon?
I'm sorry.
Back to Councilwoman Quayton.
It was my understanding, the way that I read the Senate bill, that snowmobiles were included in the list of prohibited vehicles. So we're saying that if we do this, it's not consistent with what the state, with what they passed? I apologize.
I would again turn to Attorney Spurk, who had given his insight. If you don't mind coming to the lectern or any microphone, Attorney Spurk. I just wanted to, and I asked for clarification. I was not at the committee meeting for anyone following along, but I want to make sure not only are we being consistent, but that we're within whatever the powers given to us are.
From talking to the district attorney.
From talking to the district attorney tonight at the meeting and talking to Chief Cott earlier about her prior conversations with the DA's office, they're the ones who actually do the forfeiture. They handle it, they prosecute it, they litigate it. Our discussions were limited. My understanding was that their interests were limited to the dirt bike menace as opposed to any other vehicle.
Snowmobile menace? I see now that it's not included in the forfeiture, in the list of vehicles forfeited. And I apologize for not fully understanding that. Given the fact that we don't have powers of enforcement in that way, I would like to withdraw my amendment. Unfortunately, it won't be enforceable, so.
So there,
yeah,
I mean, at this point, they were already voted on, so the ordinance is amended. I would simply say, and Attorney Stewart, you could correct me, that at this point, we would just, Councilman Quitek would make a motion to essentially revert the ordinance back to, I mean, we only have to reconsider because we're not bringing anything we vote on back to the, essentially we'd make a amendment to just revert the ordinance back to its original language. We'd
not
make a motion to.
Can I just clarify? With the snowmobiles, can they be fined but not forfeited?
Correct.
So yes. They still can be fined. So there still is some.
They just can't seize them.
So there is still some validity for have snowmobiles added. Okay. So they can be fined, but they will not be forfeited.
Correct.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
It is illegal. They can be. There is a penalty.
Forfeiture is not part of the penalty.
Thank you, Councilwoman, for that. Councilwoman Quitek, are you satisfied with that penalty? Understood. So we would not, so back to where we were. There are no more amendments currently on the table. Any further discussion on the ordinance as amended? Thank you, Chief Cott. Thank you, Mr. Spurk, for clarification for me, as I wanted to, with the forfeiture part of the penalties. Any more discussion? Mr. Miller, please call the roll on the ordinance as is amended.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution. Resolution 10A.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and Controller and or such other city officials as deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with Christmas City Spirits, LLC for Night Market. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Francis Smith.
Discussion. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
Mr. Colon?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10B.
Be it resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for $2 million Monroe County local share assessment grant from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used for mixed housing development at Gateway on 4th, Phase 1. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leon and Ms. Francis Smith.
Discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leon?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Quiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolution 10C.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem, city officials deemed appropriate by the city solicitor are hereby authorized and directed to execute all application forms necessary to apply for a $2 million Lehigh Northampton local share assessment grant from the Commonwealth Financing Authority to be used for mixed housing development at Gateway on 4th, Phase 1. Resolution sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Francis Smith.
Discussion. Ms. Leone?
Just didn't want the moment to pass without saying how great this would be for the city if we do get this, and how great it would be for the Eastern Gateway project. I'm aware that we're just trudging along, but this really is a big deal. And just continue the great work on the affordable housing projects.
Thank you, Councilwoman. Any other discussion? We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. I'll accept the motion as second to consider resolutions 10D through 10F as a group.
So moved. Second.
I'm going to say motion by Councilwoman Callahan, second by Councilwoman Leone. Any discussion on the motion to consider as a group? We'll call the roll on the motion.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Motion passes 7-0. Mr. Miller, please read the COAs.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem resolutions, are hereby granted for 30 East Wall Street to replace the existing rear slate roof with GAF shingles in the antique slate color. 3032 West Market Street to replace a total of 36 windows, including 32 double hung units, one picture unit, and three casement units with Marvin Elevate windows. The applicant also proposes to remove, restore, repaint the existing shutters, repaint the wood sills and lintels for the windows being replaced, and install new 6-inch half round gutters. And for 229 East Wall Street to replace existing shingled roof with GAF Timberline HDZ shingles in the antique slate gray color. Resolutions are sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Francis Smith.
Discussion on the group. We'll call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Lastly, 10G of the COA from HCC.
Certificate of appropriateness under the provision of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature, Bethlehem Resolution, is hereby granted for 325 Broadway to replace the existing storefront, install a new awning and new signage, along with upgrades to the entrance for Americans with Disability Act compliance. Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Leone and Ms. Francis Smith.
Discussion. Call the roll.
Ms. Leone?
Aye.
Ms. Wilhelm?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Ms. Francis Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Kwiatek?
Aye.
Ms. Laird?
Aye.
And Mr. Cologne?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Meeting is adjourned. Get home safe, everyone.
Oh, thank you.